Hello, and welcome to Securing Sexuality. It's a podcast where we discuss the intersection of intimacy
and information security. I'm Wolf Gorlick.
He's a hacker. And I'm Stephanie Gorlick.
She's a sex therapist. And together we're going to discuss what safe sex looks like in a digital age. So, last week, last episode, we were talking with Sean Gallagher, right? And he was talking about pig butchering. And I was talking to you, and I'm like, oh, I know this one because you've talked about this. This is like pay pigs and all these sort of things. Because I remember hearing you like do your consult, help the other sex therapist jive that you do. And you were covering this. I'm like, yes. And you're like, no, baby. No, baby. That is not right.
It is not right. Pig butchering, which I still don't like the term of. It's gross. And I'm a meat eater and I still don't like it. It has nothing to do with what you're thinking of with pay pigs. So what you're thinking of is FinDom, which is a dramatically different thing.
Is it, though? Is it really?
Well, I mean, if done ethically, yes. Although I suppose, you know, there are risks for exploitation that could lead to pig butchering.
Well, let's put the butchering aside, unless people are into that, but that's not this show. Talk to me, what is FinDom? Financial domination, I'm assuming.
Yeah, financial domination. So this is a practice that usually happens online. It's not usually an in-person sort of activity where somebody is the financial dominant for their submissive. And that can take a couple different forms, right? The most common form, honestly, is just stuff like OnlyFans or other sort of content creator websites, where people will put up a wish list and demand that their followers pay tribute to them by sending them things from their wish list or by buying them gift cards. In that sense, it can be seen as an extension of sex work. But there are also whole websites devoted to connecting people who enjoy this sort of mental and emotional control with people that want to financially dominate others. So that's the short version.
So I want to understand what financially dominant means. But first, since we are at the intersection of sexuality and technology, what tech are people using? You mentioned OnlyFans.
There are specialized platforms like findom.com. The thing I thought was most funny was part of what brought this to my attention, there was an article published on LinkedIn on how to become a FinDom. So we talk about erotic minorities kind of being marginalized and moving towards the mainstream. But I can't think of anything more mainstream to the point of boring and dull than LinkedIn. So when LinkedIn is publishing how to be a FinDom posts, you know that this is something that has gone relatively mainstream.
Oh, come on. LinkedIn is super edgy. I saw people posting the other day that they didn't necessarily always like their job.
Well, none of us like our jobs. No ethical work under capitalism, right?
I disagree. I love my job. But okay, so we've got social media in there. We've got what else? I'm assuming bank accounts. So is this just like standard cash or is this also cryptocurrency and stuff?
I mean, it's whatever the people negotiate, right? And that's one of the questions it's hard to ask about any sort of negotiated power exchange relationship is people always want to know, well, what does it look like? And the answer is it can look like all kinds of things. It can look like general sort of DS, like a long distance power exchange or dominance and submission relationship where people weave in an element of blackmail as one of the punishments or as one of sort of the powers that is held. This idea that if you don't follow my directives, then I will take money out of your bank account. I will make charges to your credit card. That can be one form that it takes. Blackmail would be more commonly a form of psychological play, right? Where somebody's, they're role-playing this idea of blackmail. They're role-playing this idea of, if you don't do what I say, I'm going to out you, or I'm going to tell others about you. This can have financial repercussions for people when we think about jobs and livelihoods and status in the community. So that can be admittedly a high risk. I would call this a form of edge play, but it is a form of psychological DS that a lot of people enjoy. On the flip side of that, the less scary side, there are elements of caregiver kinks in this, where perhaps the dominant takes on like a parental figure sort of role and gives their submissive a weekly allowance, or has their submissive stay within a budget and report out their spending to the dominant in a way that feels very caring and authoritative, not controlling or blackmailish. So those are some of the main ways that we see FinDom play out.
Well, you know, I love the idea of getting an allowance with your own money. And as much as I love that, I got to go back to something that's sarcastic for anyone to pick up. I got to go back to something you said about punishments. Whatever happened in the good old days where they like had shock collars over the internet or the cages that zapped people? That at least makes sense to me. Like, I'm not saying that it makes sense to do that, but a zap makes sense. I don't know that I would want someone to punish me by taking money on my bank account. I don't. How do those two equate? That's not tracking for me.
So this comes down to one of the things that can often be confusing for people. People tend to think that sadomasochism is always about sensation play, like you're describing, physical sensation, zapping, swatting, pinching, tickling, physical things. But there are people that really enjoy their physiological reactions to those sorts of experiences who don't necessarily want to experience physical discomfort. So you might be asking me, well, how does that even work? How do you have a physiological reaction to something without the physical sensation?
You know me so well, that's exactly what I was thinking.
The thing is that our brains are primal creatures. They are wonderfully complicated, incredibly fascinating, woefully stupid machines. And our brains cannot actually perceive differences in danger. So emotional risk feels the same and is received and processed by the brain in the same way that physical risk is. We're going to have the same cortisol spikes. We're going to have the same elevated heart rate. We're going to have the same sort of endorphin rushes when it's over, whether something is physically scary or emotionally scary. So for people who identify as pay pigs or cash cows or human ATMs or money slaves or whatever term they use for themselves, they experience the same physiological reaction from paying the tribute or making the purchase or sending the Amazon wish list item that somebody else might from receiving a zap or a buzz from a connected sex toy. They don't need the physical encounter in order to have the same physiological reaction. The thrill of the financial purchase, the risk of the spend, the sense of coercion or of servitude, all of those are experienced in their brains the same way that physical risk or fear or sensation would be.
Is the non-physical aspect a part of this? Like, is that part of the goal? You mentioned being online, and we're going to put LinkedIn aside for a moment, but I think you threw out a couple other websites. What were some of the websites you mentioned?
FinDom.com. I mentioned OnlyFans. There are others. Those are the two biggest. Some of the foot fetish websites also have FinDom components.
Okay. Is the act of like mediating this over an online app or text channel or something, is that part of the kink here?
So the distance does seem to be a part of it. There are IRL, in real life, DS relationships where certainly, you know, a submissive will bring gifts to their dominant or pay bills or do other things for their dominant as a way of showing their care for that person. But FinDom specifically tends to be a primarily online experience. And a part of that can be because the FinDom herself, and I'm going to use she, her pronouns because it is overwhelmingly female. There are some male FinDoms out there, but they are few and far between. And one of the elements of this kind of play is this idea that the pay pig or the cash cow is not paying for a service, that they should not expect to get anything in sort of reciprocity for the tribute that they're paying, that the idea that the fin dom would do something for them, whether it's send pictures or do a cam performance or anything, is actually really outside of the realm. And how dare they suggest such a thing? And that assumption can become a part of the humiliation degradation play. So that obviously works better when people are online as opposed to in the same room. The dynamic and is facilitated by the platform.
All right. So the person's there. They're paying for a service where they can't ask for a service. They're engaging over one of these websites. If it is a website designed for this, I'm assuming it's not breaking the terms of service. I got to imagine if you were to do this over LinkedIn, that would break the terms of service. But there's other technologies involved, right? So we talked about the banking side. Obviously, the whole FinDom is tied to finance. So I guess my question to you is, how does a bank distinguish between consensual fraud and non-consensual fraud?
I love that you're asking me the banking question because, I mean, the short answer is I don't know. We should call Shakun Seti. But my sort of intuitive answer is that a lot of this is subverted because we're not necessarily talking about cash payments per se, right? If somebody goes and buys a $500 Visa gift card, and then takes pictures of the numbers for that card and sends those pictures to their FinDom, where is the bank in that process? Is the bank even going to notice that transaction? Now, there are some extreme instances where a PayPig might make their FinDom an authorized user on a credit card or add them to a bank account.
Yeah, that was the one that I remember. That's why I was getting towards, because one of the cases you're consulting on wasn't that was part of it, right? They had like set up their, is it still called Dom or is it called FinDom? What is the dominant called in this part?
FinDom.
So they set up the FinDom on their account and then were surprised when the FinDom took money out of their account.
Well, let me clarify. The practice is uncommon. It is unusual for somebody to take the step of adding their FinDom to their bank's banking accounts. Because, to your point about fraud, once somebody's added as an authorized user, it's not fraud anymore. You have authorized them to use your account. And if you wake up tomorrow and that account is empty, that was not unauthorized use of your account. So that is considered a very deep, entrenched, edgy form of power exchange that I think most people in the kink community would not feel comfortable doing. But there are people that like to play at the margins. So, you know, nothing is ever completely outside the realm of possibility. What we more often see is people purchasing gifts from Amazon wish lists, or as I mentioned, buying gift cards. It could be something like some of the FinDom websites function a lot like the online content websites for OnlyFans or similar sites, where the user purchases tokens and then they use those tokens to pay their FinDom content creator in that case. So there are a number of mechanisms and ways to avoid sort of the banking protective oversight that we have when somebody walks into a bank and wants to, I don't know, send a $1,000 wire transfer. Cashiers and tellers are trained to ask questions about that. If you go to Western Union, they have like a whole fraud prevention Q&A sort of board that they run through with questions. Do you know who you're sending this to? How well do you know them? What is this for? All these different questions. But if somebody's buying something on Amazon or buying a gift card at the gas station or purchasing tokens on a website, those are not transactions that have a lot of oversight.
You know, you're reminding me a bit of what happened at our conference, right? Which I think we covered in episode 57. We got conned. And one of the things that we learned was if you transfer the money, it's no longer fraud. Like if you did it, you're on the hook for that. So yeah, that seems on the edgier side of edge play. I like this idea of tokens that you're talking about. I think that seems a little bit safer, so you have more control there.
I mean, to a point, nobody's going to tell you that you can't empty your bank account buying tokens. Nobody's going to tell you you can't overdraw in order to buy the expensive thing on the wish list. There are ways to protect the account specifically from being accessed without your permission, but there isn't a lot of protection in place to keep people from voluntarily making riskier financial decisions.
Well, we're on the topic of things that go wrong. What about our favorite topic of the day, AI and chatbots? What is going on with FinDoms in chatbots? Are they at risk of losing out? I mean, because I got to imagine if you were paying tokens, I can easily imagine someone going, hey, wouldn't it be great if we just got rid of those pesky women who are asking for the tokens and replace them with a chatbot?
We know that almost half of internet traffic right now is bots, right? It's like 47% bots. So, I mean, first that begs the question, how do you know it's not already happening? And there are certain, I don't even want to say fail safes, but a lot of FinDoms are low-key content creators. They will, you know, give photo sets for a tribute, or they might do live texting, or they might do a cam conversation. It's very rare that they engage in sexier activities that we might think of with OnlyFans, because that denial piece is a part of the eroticism for the submissive. But you know, that we're moving towards an age where that can be replicated with AI too. We just had that news story where, what was it, a bank in Hong Kong? Somebody transferred hundreds of thousands of dollars because they were on a Zoom call with like six AI people that are not AI people, but they thought they were six people that they worked with, their bosses and coworkers and colleagues. And it turned out the entire thing was AI generated and they convinced them to transfer money. So right now, we can still kind of parse out who's the human by looking at the degree of sort of customized interaction and the request fulfillment, I'll say. But you're absolutely right. We're moving towards a time where especially people that are finding their FinDoms on social media. One of the tips I read in the LinkedIn article said, just go on Twitter and look at hashtag FinDom and you'll find people that want to be FinDoms and you can find your FinDom that way. And I thought that was the worst idea I've ever heard, because you're going to find someone that will take your money, sure, but you don't necessarily know that that's a FinDom. That could, to your point, very well be a bot. Or it could be somebody working in, to Sean's point last week, a pig butchering sort of situation. So there's not a lot of ways to know if who you're interacting with online is real at all. And that's true in this case as well.
Yeah, and I know one of the ones that I've heard is like Only Voice AI, and Princess Cinderella is using her own character AI to generate her things. So there's a lot of movement that way. Oh, but by the way, it wasn't just hundreds of thousands. It was nearly 25 million that these scammers got out of this poor guy. And he wasn't a consenting pay pig. He just was a regular guy who ends up being on a Zoom with a whole bunch of fake people who are like, yes, I agree. You need to do this. He's like, okay, if you guys want me to do it.
Well, let me tell you, the physiological reaction he had, the fear that that evoked in him once he realized the mistake he had made. You don't need to zap him or buzz him with anything to have a reaction there. So that is a case that proves my point.
Well, do you think, putting aside people who are tricking people such as that and looking more at people who are using these tools in a way that is both upfront to the person who wants to be dominated and the dominating person, Do you think we're going to see a split in services? Now, let me tell you what I mean by that. This morning, I picked up croissants for us. They're on the counter.
I saw that. Thank you.
You're welcome. They're not the best croissants. they're okay croissants. They're the type of croissants that you get at a grocery store on a Sunday morning. They're not the best croissants. If you were to go to a great bakery, they might be better. Or conversely, if we were to make things at home, remember like when you made challah bread on Fridays, how great that challah bread was? That was some really, you cannot buy bread as good as the bread that I had that you baked on those Fridays. So there's a market for both, like, I'm not going to call it fast croissants, like fast food, but, you know, bulk croissants made mostly by machines. And there's a market for your more artisanal experience. Do you foresee the market for Findom sort of splitting between those two?
I think that makes a lot of sense. We are moving in an age of hyper-customization in all things. You know, whether it's micro-identities in the people that we hang out with and talk to, or custom-made Converse that I have with little messages on them. Everything we do, we are living in an age where things move so fast and are produced so easily that you can have this hyper-specific created thing that is exactly what you want. And no living, breathing person can ever be that, right? So there's always going to be a difference between those two things. As you were talking, I was thinking about when I went to the cyber brothel. And I could easily see the personas that they had created for their dolls be turned into AI avatars that the visitors could interact with after they've had that experience, after they've left, where they could feel like they're forming a lasting relationship with this entity that they have met in real life, and the entire experience being created and artificial.
And that makes me wonder, that makes me think about something you've been talking about a lot, and you'll be keynoting a conference in Chicago coming up in May on. And that is authenticity kinks. What is the overlap between authenticity kinks and pay picks?
That is a fascinating question. One of the things that we are seeing in research around pornography is a move away from hyper-stylized sort of parody or goofy films that are like feature length. Like I always think of like the Matrix parody porn, right? Like in the 90s and early 2000s, that was what porn was.
Can I interrupt you?
Sure.
There is Matrix parody porn?
There is, yes.
You know how much I love the Matrix. And we've been podcasting for years, and this is the first time you're telling me that there's Matrix parody porn?
All right, look, I went to the cyber brothel. Maybe we'll do an episode where you watch the Matrix parody porn and I record your reaction to it.
I just feel like you've been holding out on me. This is all right. Keep going. Keep going. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Historically, and I mean historically, to the early days of filmed pornography, there was some sort of conceit, some sort of plot, some sort of gimmick that drove the quote-unquote narrative of what was happening on screen. What researchers are finding is that millennials and Gen Z, as they age up and start watching created erotic content, aren't actually interested in that. What they want to see is authentic people having authentic sex in authentic ways, meaning diversity of bodies, diversity of pairings, diversity of gender identities, diversities of sexual orientation. They don't want the glossy, highly produced, really sort of like faux Hollywood porn of 20 years ago. They want something that looks and feels very real. And I think that ties in directly to what you're talking about now, is that people who are connecting with Findoms, for the most part, feel a very real sense of connection in those relationships. And they want people who will interact with them as unique human beings? Who will know how to degrade them in a way that works? Who will know what gentle threat or overt threat or guidance they can offer that will make the pay pig, the cash cow, feel seen, validated, and treated the way they want to be treated, even if how they want to be treated isn't necessarily how you or I would want to be.
Let's jump back to what you're saying about the hashtag in Twitter. If you're just randomly, like, you know, spin the dial, scroll, click on one of these hashtags and pick someone, you're not going to know if they have any skill. And it seems to me, but what you're saying, this is, and maybe I'm putting too deep of a label on it, but this is a skilled profession, right? This idea that I've got access to your bank account, I'm going to have to navigate that carefully. I'm going to have to ask for things carefully. I'm going to have to exert enough pressure, but not too much pressure. And as you're talking through that, it really highlights for me what you meant by, yeah, don't just pick someone off a random Twitter hashtag. Oof. The other question that came to mind was, as you were talking about historical avenues of pornography, I'm reminded of your line that kink is a place and a time, right? Kink is driven by a moment. Is this idea of findom part of the, 2020 to 24 zeitgeist? Is there an underlying moment that's driving this? And if so, can we expect to see this like taper off? What's your prediction as we come to the close of this podcast?
So in looking at the research, there have been folks studying the phenomenon of findom and researching in sort of like an ethnographic or sociological way findoms themselves since like the late 90s, early 2000s. So this isn't a super new phenomenon. However, it used to be a much more niche phenomenon than it is. And what we saw really was this exploded during the pandemic, when people were locked down, when existing in-person relationships might have been cut down or disconnected for a while. People were looking for ways to have those emotional, erotic needs met, and they were looking to online facilitators for that, like findoms. The flip side, the other thing that happened during the pandemic was a lot of people that did in-real-life work couldn't go to work anymore. We all experienced that. I went on vacation, came back, went into lockdown, and literally never returned to my office again.
And that's one of the things that Sean Gallagher pointed out last week. The pandemic and the change in employment was one of the reasons why pig butchering scams launched. So yeah, this we're shuffling the deck economically.
And we have the same things impacting sex workers and erotic content creators. And I want to be very clear, those are not the same people. There's some overlap, but not all sex workers create erotic content. Not all content creators do sex work. However, during lockdown, for our sex workers, they were not, like many of the rest of us who did in real life work, able to do their jobs. It wasn't safe to service their customers or to go out on dates or to have interactions. So they turned to digital platforms because that was the way that all of us did work at that time. So we have this sort of perfect storm confluence of a consumer base, which I hate to describe that way, but I mean, we're talking about exchange of financial resources here. I'm going to use economic terms for now. A consumer base who's cut off from its other ways of accessing erotic services, emotional connection, power exchange relationships. And at the same time, a group of workers who are cut off from their traditional ways of engaging in their work and earning their income, both going online, finding each other. And since 2020, especially, we've really seen this explode and go become common enough and go mainstream enough that I'm reading about it on LinkedIn.
You know, when we are behind an app or behind a website, there is, I think, a feeling, and I would argue an illusion of safety. So you mentioned the pandemic. One of the things that we, our household really did was there's an uptick in food being sent to us, right? Like delivery services. Yeah. I came across a study, and that felt safe, right? That felt very safe. You click a button, the food comes to you. It's great. I came across a study that was done in 21 out of California that found that line cooks were the highest risk occupation for dying during COVID.
Oh, wow.
So we think we just push the button and everything's safe, but at the same time, we're creating this condition on the other end of that app that is very unsafe for a large population of people, in this case, delivery services and line cooks. My question to you is, as we wrap up this episode, probably the last thing we're going to be able to ask you about this, even though I have so many more things on my mind, is you obviously consult with other therapists. You see this front end. What are some of the ways that you would recommend, either from a FinDom perspective or from a client perspective, submissive perspective, what are some of the ways to do this safely? Or is this really just a very edgy process and you should just stick to talking to AI?
I don't know that I will ever say AI and safety in the same sentence. So let's just start by ruling that part out. So advice for both sides are really similar, and that is be clear about your boundaries up front and stick to them. So if you are interested in doing FinDom work, one of the consistent themes in the literature and in articles and conversations with people who do FinDom work is this sense that they are often pressured to go beyond their personal boundaries and personal comfort because of the financial stakes involved, right? It's really easy to say, I send still pictures, but I don't show my face. Don't even ask me to show my face. If you ask me to show my face, I'm going to degrade and humiliate you, and then I'm going to make you pay a financial penalty. That could be a part of somebody's FinDom dynamic. But if they have a cash cow that is saying, but I'll give you $10,000 if you'll show me your face. I'll give you $12,000 if you'll show me your face. You know, the financial pressure can become a sort of external source of coercion. We all have economic circumstances and realities that we live in. And much like any worker, you need to know what conditions you're willing to work under, what your hours are going to be, what you are willing to do and what you're not, and to stick with that no matter what. Because if I need to make rent this month, and I have somebody offering me $1,000 to violate a rule I've created for myself, it can be really tempting to do that. And I'm not saying that they're pressuring or coercing or doing anything wrong. They are acting as one might expect one to do, which is asking for a personal disclosure in exchange for a personal tribute. I get why they would ask, but that's why it's so important for the FinDom to have very clear boundaries and be very comfortable saying no. The flip side for our pay pigs, our cash cows, our human ATMs is to know your limits too. It is totally okay if this is your thing, and I'm never going to judge anybody that is turned on or feels happy and complete in engaging in this behavior. But what I would say is, set a budget for yourself. Give yourself an allowance. Set up a separate account that is your FinDom account and deposit into that account what you are comfortable gifting in a given month. And when that account is empty, you need to be done for the month. That can also, if you do really like the idea of this intense sort of, I'm going to give my FinDom access to my accounts play, which I discourage, let me go on record as saying that is a bad idea, but it is your decision to make, then at least they only have access to that dedicated account that only has a certain amount of money in it and which is not tied to the funds that you use to pay for rent, pay for bills, feed your children, whatever the case may be. It is totally possible to play with FinDom to explore financial and erotic and emotional degradation and humiliation in ways that are safe and fun and friendly. But it really starts with very clear, very defined boundaries on both sides of the slash from day one.
Good advice, good advice. And vet, I'm sure.
100%. I do not recommend finding your sexy time partner on Twitter, no matter what kind of sexy time you're interested in. When money is involved in your sexy time exchanges, you want to be even more judicious in where you're finding people and how you are establishing trust before money is exchanged.
Stick to LinkedIn.
Yeah, find your FinDom on LinkedIn. They're helping people enter the field. Why not?
No, that is not advice from this podcast. All right. Thanks for answering my questions about this. And thank you so much for tuning in to Securing Sexuality, your source of information you need to protect yourself and your relationships.
Securing Sexuality is brought to you by the Bound Together Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit. From the bedroom to the cloud, we're here to help you navigate safe sex in a digital age.
Be sure to check out our website, securingsexuality.com, for links to more information about the topics we discussed here today, our live events, and you'll notice nowhere on that website are we asking for tribute.
But, you know, I won't turn it down if somebody wants to take a look at my Amazon wish list.
Wow.
What? You're someone? I'm sending you a link to my Amazon wish list. Join us again for more fascinating conversations about the intersection of sexuality and technology. Have a great week.